Welcome. You are about to join the story of Lioness. Listen as host and author Diane Pendola brings you the Lioness Tale. Now it's time to come together and awaken to the liberating spirit that lives at the center of each of our lives. Here's Diane Pendola.
Hello, this is Diane Pendola, and you are listening to the Lioness Tale, Awakening the Liberating Spirit. I'd like to suggest that we begin our time together by taking a moment to get comfortable, to relax wherever you are, to breathe, and just prepare yourself to be read to. And enjoy the story, because today we are finishing our story, The Lioness Tale. And once again, we welcome Teresa Hahn, the voice of our Lioness Tale, and the inspiration for the character of the Panther to our show today. In the last reading of our book, our lioness had given birth to her cubs and fell into a devastating depression after they were taken away from her. And very slowly, through the faithful companionship of the Panther, she begins to find the will to live again. So this is where we pick up the story.
The lioness looked into the black cat's beautiful golden eyes, searching there for a reason to go on, for a reason to live. The panther met the gaze of the lioness, held it, and invited the lioness to come all the way in. The silent one entered. She was drawn away from the concrete floor of her cage, away from the bars, away from the rolls of razor wire enclosing the preserve, away from the barren land with its bite of dust in her mouth like a hot, dry wind. She was drawn deeper and deeper, drawn by a force beyond her, the way a mountain stream is drawn by the distant sea. And she let go. Like a stone dropping through the currents of a river, she dropped below the raging of her thoughts. She dropped below the swirling emotions of her heart, deeper and deeper until she reached waters still and calm. Through the door of the panther's gaze, she entered into waters hitherto unknown, and yet they were not deeper than herself. No matter how deep she went, she was still within herself, the way a wave is still within itself when it breaks upon the open sea. No longer merely a wave, but also the sea. No longer merely a part, but also the whole. She dropped deeper and deeper until she was the whole of the sea, and deeper still until she was the spaciousness that held the sea and the stars and the moon. She was exquisite spaciousness. And the space was infinite and soft and black, the way velvet is soft and black. It was a soft, black, comforting velvet spaciousness without boundaries. And this, too, was herself. She rested a long time in this spaciousness. In this timeless realm, she rested where she and the panther were neither one nor two, but separate manifestations of a life force that joined them as members of one continuous self. When the Silent One woke that morning, dawn was lapping against the horizon with red and purple waves of light. Feathered clouds graced the morning sky with shimmering veils of gold. She watched the horizon until the sun crowned radiant. Still confined to her solitary cell, weeks turned into months, but she did not feel alone. The panther was a constant presence. When her body was not lying stretched on the earth beside the Silent One's cell, the black cat spirit stretched to inhabit the space between them like a soft breeze. The Silent One looked forward especially to the deep nights when the keeper's eyes were closed in sleep, and her friend could continue to unfold the story of her life to the lioness, mysteriously giving meaning to the Silent One's own life. There was something in me that knew the change was coming, the Black Panther's words reached into the past, as she smelled the faraway scent of strangers landing upon the shores of her native home. She saw again the devastation that was to come. Snake's voice receded, and my dream faded as I returned to ordinary life. But I felt his presence within me as a knowing which transcended the boundaries of time and space. It was a cup I would have had passed from me. The pride preferred not to hear the premonitions of disaster I brought to the circle of elders. They turned a deaf ear to my prophecies, and I wonder now, why should they have listened? Was there anything any of us could have done? The panther's energy was heavy this particular night, and it filled the lioness with a sense of foreboding, as though invisible hands were reaching into dark corners of her own life. The life I had always known, the life I had trusted, would always be there. The life I had thought would be passed on to my cubs and their offspring after them. The intricate tapestry that had been woven through generations of panthers was about to unravel over the course of a few short seasons. I requested a special gathering of the pride. We gathered on our sacred mountain. A gentle spring wind ruffled the fur on my back. I could hear the sound of crickets blending with the song of frogs. In the soft light of the moon, I could see my friends, family, teachers, my whole life assembled in a circle around me. There are strangers in our land, I told the assembled group. There are strangers in our land, and the rumors we have heard from our relations in distant parts of the forest are coming home to touch our own sister, our own children, our own fathers. The fragrance of freedom inhaled by our parents and grandparents will now become the scent of fear breathed by our children and children's children. Murder is coming upon us, and slavery. We are entering dark times. But the dark times are not greater than the light. We remember that without the light, no shadow can be cast. A great shadow is about to fall upon our homeland. In this shadow, we must remember what in the light we loved. I watched fear rise in the eyes of those ones I so dearly loved. My words were like a spear driving into my own heart. They did not recognize what slavery was. How can you know something of which you have no experience, no word, no concept? They shook their heads at me. They walked away. They did not understand. And what they did not understand, they feared. They came to fear me. I had been a respected member of my pride, prepared from my earliest days to become a teacher and a leader. Now I was an outcast in the midst of them, an object of their scorn. I sought the solace of solitude. I sought the spacious regions of the inner world, the inner life. Instead, I found a desert. Everything I had come to believe, I now came to doubt. All that I had come to value as true rose in my mind and in my heart to mock me as a lie. My own thoughts called me fool, echoing the words spoken to me now by my own family. I remembered my dream, and it appeared upon that inner desert like a shimmering mirage, a mere fantasy created by my overwhelming desire. I listened for the counsel of Snake, and heard only the voice of my own doubt. The pride that had swelled in my chest, returning home from my quest, young and full of power of my dream, now withered in the wilderness like an overripe piece of fruit. It left a hard and wrinkled pit where a living heart once beat. In the center of that pit, I knew the one thing the pride did not want to hear, the one thing I did not want to tell, that death was coming upon us. In my dreams, I saw the devastation that was to come, and in my waking, I continued to cry out my warnings to the pride. I tried to encourage them to prepare, but the more urgent my warnings, the deeper was the silence that returned to me, and the wider the distance between myself and all I loved. Under the cover of night, one of the most respected elders, my beloved teacher, came to me. He came as a friend, and as a friend, he encouraged me to keep silent. "Your words do not bring peace, but division," he said. "They do not bring comfort, but cut like a sword. There has not been such division among us, such fear and enmity in my memory, or in the memory of our pride. You are too full of self-importance. You are full of the self-deceit from which pride blossoms. If truth were at work in your words, would not the truth in our own hearts rise up in recognition?" I was hungry to hear his words, hungry to surrender the knowing of my own heart to his greater wisdom. His words were reasoned words, seasoned with many years of wise and gentle leadership. I had searched my own heart for an answer to this very question. Why, indeed, did the others not recognize the truth that had made itself known to me? And again, a choice was before me. I cannot fail to speak the truth that has been given me. It is not for me to judge what is true for others, but to be faithful to the knowing that lights my own path. I said this hoping for understanding, but knowing it was not what he had come into the night to obtain from me. "What is truth?" he said. It was not a question. It was a dismissal. I watched him leave. I knew he would not return. It made no sense to me why I did not follow him, why I did not submit myself to his authority, but I did not. I remained in a darkness that invaded all my senses. It permeated my thinking, my imagining, and my feeling. I reached out with all my faculties to grasp the knowing within that held to the integrity of my choice. It eluded me. Days passed, and I fell deeper and deeper into a darkness of soul. I fell not into what was known, but into what knew me, not into anything I could grasp, but into something that grasped me, that held me in benediction, that would never let me go. "You are deluded," were his parting words, the last words to be spoken to me by any member of the pride, until the days the foreigners came upon us. By then, it was too late. The Black Panther paused in telling her story. She gazed intently into the eyes of the lioness. "It is a lonely journey, Silent One. The temptation is great to become someone other than ourselves, and many there are that take that path. The path is narrow that leads home, but it is not lonely forever, only for a little while. It can make all the difference to have a friend who can tell you that." The Silent One looked away from the eyes of her friend into the night sky. The stars were sharp and bright against the blackness. The sky was so like her friend, so like her eyes, so like her long, supple body stretched out just beyond reach. Her eyes, her coat, her whole being reflected the starlight like a turning diamond refracts the light. "The Diamond One," she thought to herself, "that's what she is to me." It was several evenings later before the Diamond One resumed her story. "I was one of the survivors," she began. "I got away with my life, but the months that followed were heavy with loss and with a sickening guilt that I was still breathing, still opening my eyes upon the dawn, when all whom I loved and cared for were dead or captured. I saw scenes over and over in my mind. In my waking and in my sleeping, I saw the foreigners close the trap they had cunningly laid for the members of my pride. It was inevitable that the collective denial would eventually crack under the weight of evidence coming to us from cats who lived closer to that part of the coast where the foreigners had first come ashore. They were fleeing up the shoreline and into the deeper forest, into our territory, with stories of horror. And with them, the unsettled flight of birds and the warning calls of eagles alerted us to the presence of invaders in close pursuit. My clan pushed further and further into the jungle, but we did not realize that the canyon beyond towards which we were heading for refuge was soon to become a death trap. The foreigners had been there before us, digging pits lined with thick netting, setting guards at all possible escape routes. As the Pride approached the canyon, we heard the wailing of many dogs rising up from behind us. Our adults formed a protective circle around the cubs and the old ones and hastened the pace toward the canyon. I was bringing up the rear of the circle when suddenly the forward line disappeared into the camouflaged pits. Suddenly, all was confusion. Dogs came from every direction. The foreigners were exploding their irons into the center of the circle where the elders were falling to the ground. Other foreigners were capturing the cubs with ropes and nets, while still other cats were pursued and cornered by the hounding dogs. The Diamond One's voice was breaking. I watched as my own father, treed by dogs, was shot down by one of the foreigners. I watched the dogs tear his flesh, and I was powerless to stop them, powerless to tear through the ropes that bound me. The panther's grief choked her voice. The Silent One never imagined that the panther, too, carried such wounds. The Diamond One had seen beyond such grief, beyond the raw sorrow that the Silent One now witnessed, trembling through the black cat's entire body as her words stumbled into a low and mournful wail. The lioness longed to reach out with her whole being to embrace her friend, to wrap her in the protective circle of her own body's warmth and make her safe. But something else was stirring her. Alongside this tenderness rose an aggression, a desire to stop this telling, to stop the black anxiety now lapping at her own consciousness. But the panther did not stop. I threw myself against the ropes with the entire strength of my body. With full focus of my will, I fought, but with each movement the ropes tightened, and with each lunge the netting burned into my flesh. The Silent One also felt the burning ropes across her own shoulders. Her own heart began to pound with a combination of fear and rage that gathered momentum in her muscles, that sparked like flashes of electricity through her nerves, that coursed like fire through her spine and burst in her mind's eye into image. The Silent One remembered. The images rushed in, tumbling one upon the other with a terrible clarity. She remembered her capture. She remembered her frantic running, running from the terrible image of her mother's death. And she remembered the moment before, the crispness of the air, the clean, cold, exuberant breath that had filled her lungs, the pure vitality that had culminated in her lioness roar. And then the answering retort, the explosion that shattered the air and shattered her life, the shot that had pursued her down through the years, haunting her dreams, igniting panic in her veins, imposing submission, demanding that she pay for that roar which brought the wrath of death upon her beloved mother. And how she had paid. Submissive and silent beneath the hand of the keepers, she atoned for a crime that was not hers. The Silent One, they had called her, and counted on her silence to cover the multiplication of their crimes. She saw it all as though looking into a sphere of crystal. She saw her young innocence at the sphere's center. She saw the ensuing events of her life reverberating like waves flowing into the present circle of her existence. And it all flowed from a cub's misconception. She was not responsible for her mother's murder. It was not her roar that mysteriously drew the death blow to her mother's living body. And her silence could never bring her mother back. Way down in her deepest core, it began. It coursed through her backbone. It spread hot into her pelvis. It retched in her belly at the memory of her mother's death. And yet it continued, slicing up through her heart, cutting away the proud flesh, up through her throat, the sound of dogs yapping at her ears. And still it rose, like a serpentine fire, cleaving her skull at the place between her eyes, splitting the darkness with its searing sound, rising out of her flesh, out of the silence of her life to wake her sleeping dead. Finally, her roar exploded into the world. The roar of the lioness woke the keepers from their sleep. It woke cats all across the compound, down the steep cliff walls into the valley of the male cats it reached and beyond. The coyotes ceased their howling to listen, and the wind carried it even to the dwellings of strangers that littered the desert floor many miles distant from the preserve. It gave a haunting rattle to their windows and a shiver to their hearts. It was a voice unlike any that had been heard before. It hovered over the great expanse of land and hearts and held eternity in its breath. Then it receded back into silence. In this pregnant silence, the two cats rested, their whole being now open one to the other. They touched. No more words were spoken. The lioness knew what had happened to the panther after her capture. It was her own story: imprisonment, abuse, and degradation. But the difference was the Diamond One had remembered herself, and that had made all the difference. Now the lioness also remembered. She realized that this self-remembering did not exempt her from suffering. In the world of beginnings and endings, there would always be suffering. But now her suffering had meaning. A communion of soul had grown between the two friends. It thrust through the common soil of their suffering into a shared remembrance and found roots in realms beyond time. Suns rose and sunset. Cold, hard nights turned tender. The bare desert landscape blossomed into color. Cricket song filled the air. Snakes, roused from their wintry sleep, stretched in the sun on flat rocks. Against the backdrop of such a day, when the wind was soft and warm upon her back, the Diamond One approached the lioness and said, "This is a season of new beginnings. According to the teachings of the Ancient Ones, it is a good season for entering the dream. You have yet to seek your vision, my friend." The lioness remembered the story of the panther's own vision, her departure from the pride, her lonely wandering, her meeting with Snake. "But I cannot make a journey into the wilderness. How can I seek a vision when I am caged?" The Diamond One could hear the yearning in the lioness's voice. The ancient rite had roots far back in the history of the lioness's own race. Now that primal memory rose up in the lioness, gleaming in her eyes as she looked hopefully into her friend's face. "You are already in the wilderness," the Diamond One responded. "Besides, visions come from within and beyond. I will help you." She directed her to fast for 3 days and 3 nights. "During that time, drink only water. Keep silence in your heart. Turn your gaze inward. Allow your inner ear to open." She said she would not visit her until the end of the 3 days. Then she would come, and together they would intone the ancient chant and draw the sacred circle. "I will be holding you in my heart, my friend," she said, and departed. The lioness did as she was counseled. It was so very difficult, this turning inward. Now that the floodgates of memory had opened, image upon image unfolded in her mind's eye. She could not shake them. The terrifying images awakened fear in her. She hated this fear. She hated herself for having this fear. And she could not tolerate it. She would float away from it into fantasies of power and revenge. She saw herself doing to the keepers what they had done to her. She spent her fear and hatred toward them, spinning scene upon scene of murder and domination and abuse upon those who had murdered her mother, who had dominated and abused her. And through it all, she felt justified. She saw herself as some kind of hero, exacting justice on her own behalf and on behalf of those who could not or would not fight for themselves. But the relief she found in these fantasies was fleeting. Returning hatred for hatred could never bring true justice. This yearning for truth, this yearning for justice, kept calling her deeper, calling her to face her fear and to move through it. As she practiced tolerating the fear, tender memories began to surface. She remembered herself as a small cub. She remembered the absolute trust she had in life, the openness of her heart toward all of life. She remembered the warmth of her mother's belly, the comfort. All had been right with the world. And then it all became so wrong. She was wrong. She lived it again. Her roar, the shot, her terror, the closing down of her heart. Never to be tender again. Never to be vulnerable again. Never to be innocent again. She saw how her heart closed, and she wept for that tender heart, for that tender cub, for that great loss of her life. She wept until she was spent, and then she slept. All the next day, she drifted in and out of sleep. She felt despair, despair at the loss of her innocence, at the loss of her heart, at the anger that ran through her being, as fundamental as the blood that flowed in her veins. She saw her anger, its meanness and its callousness. She saw all the ways she had fooled herself into believing that she was powerful, when in fact she was a wall of defenses against the actual fact of her powerlessness. She floated between this despair and the sleep of self-forgetting into the third day. Remembering her friend's counsel, she fought the sleep that made her body feel drugged and heavy. She roused herself and gathered all of her energy and again turned inward. Again, the currents of thought, fantasy, and emotion rose in that inner space. She let them rise, but gradually she began to notice that they also fell away. They fell away and back toward the source from which they came. She followed them back. The long, familiar lava flow of her passions branched into arteries of fear and reservoirs of hurt. And still there was something more, something other. She followed the energy of her life, energy she had wasted for so many years with bitter anger. She followed it back and down. It became the gateway to her soul. There her rage touched a wider innocence. There her anger touched a greater truth. There her passion learned compassion. There she rested until the Diamond One came. The Diamond One intoned the chant that had come through the generations from the Ancient Ones. As she began the chant, all the cats who had chanted it before, each of whom had taken their own solitary journey in quest of their own dream, were called in spirit to become a part of the sacred circle. A cloud of witnesses became present. A multitude of invisible allies were called forth as the lioness joined her voice with the panthers. The chant spiraled from tones deep in the belly into notes of trembling tenderness and trembling pathos. It crescendoed and fell to its own quiet completion. The lion was then instructed to pad out a circle, walking three times around its circumference. That done, she settled within its center. As she had done for the lioness so many times before, the panther now did again. She told her a story, deep and slow, rising and falling in rhythm with the lioness's breath. The panther's voice helped the golden cat beyond her cage. It's been a long time that you have wandered, lost in the wilderness, but now a great mountain rises in the distance. Its peak is lost in the clouds. The voice of the panther spiraled like a chant, drawing the lioness into the story and up toward the mountain. As you come to its base, you find a narrow trail worn into the rock by the hooves of deer. You sense the trail beneath your footpads, and you follow up and up until the trail branches out into many separate paths. There is no one to tell you which path to take. You must decide for yourself. And you do decide. You make a choice and you continue. There are times you experience great hunger, times of great thirst, but you persist, winding your way up and up into the clouds. Eventually, the cloud becomes so thick that you feel you are surely lost. Still, you go on, blindly, not knowing why, knowing only the desire that propels you onward, drawn by the vision that must lie ahead. Finally, you reach the top, and now, in this place of power, you again draw your circle. Through the threshold of the story, the lioness had indeed journeyed up the mountain. She patted her circle 3 times as she had been instructed and sat within its center. It was a circle within a great circle. She looked into the circle of sky above her and into the circle of space that surrounded her. It was truly spectacular. Behind her and far below lay soft jade hills. She could see rivers like turquoise threads winding between the slopes and pooling in jeweled lakes that reflected the sun. Green and undulating hills rolled down toward the desert that was blanketed by a thick white cover of cloud. She could not see the preserve, the prisons, the pettiness and meanness from here, only the softness extending toward the horizon. On either side of her, the spine of the mountain range thrust itself up toward the sky, bearing its raw-boned courage to the elements, while wind-blown trees clung tenaciously to fissured rock many feet below. Before her, the mountain dropped precipitously down into a granite basin of lakes and waterfalls. Fir and pine forests grew up between the lakes, circled lush meadows, then marched up canyons toward yet higher mountains, eternally snow-capped and silent. So much beauty, so much magnificence, and yet her heart did not swell to meet it. Her heart was like a dead thing inside of her. She felt a great emptiness overtake her. Never had she felt more alone. It was into this loneliness she dropped, deeper and deeper, until she entered her dream. She was seeking shelter from the cold in a cave upon a windy crag of mountain. The cave was littered with rock, musky with dampness, and strewn with broken webs. She pawed at the rock, circling and scratching at the earth to clear a space where she might sleep. It was then that she discovered the chest. It was very old, metal straps carved with an indecipherable language laced its edges, and a heavy padlock broken by falling rocks had sealed its contents. It was a chest full of secrets abandoned here many years before. The years had left its accumulation of dust upon its surface. Stones had nearly buried it beneath their weight. Here, as in a grave, it waited. She pawed and nudged the stones away until she could reach the padlock. As she cleared the dust from the lid and marveled at the unknown language, she heard their words being spoken in her mind. This is the place where you put the things that you forgot. She opened the chest, and in it was a dead cub, dead but still alive, all eyes, and the eyes were looking at her. At first she felt numb, as dead and unfeeling as the small lion cub. But again the word spoke, "This is the place where you put the things that you forgot." Now her heart accelerated, faster and faster it began to beat, as her breath became short and she began to weep. She wept without reason, without thought, and her weeping carried her back down the mountain, through the desert, back to the valley of her beginnings. And still she wept. The words came again a third time. "This is the place where you put the things that you forgot." And looking into the cub's eyes, she felt herself pulled into the chest, into the pain of her mother's death, into the terror of being held in the net, into the despair of powerlessness, until the chest broke open. She beheld herself standing within it, a powerful lioness, surrounded with a soft, glowing light. She looked at that poor cub, buried and alone for so long, and saw in that cub her own most vulnerable and tender self. With absolute love, she cradled her to her breast. And the cub spoke, I am the hidden core, the hidden meaning. When you see me clearly, then you will know yourself. You will know compassion because I am the clear center that reflects the truth. I am the mirror. I am the innocence against which all your deceit is revealed. I am the child whose innocence you could not tolerate, whose purity you could not sustain. This is the way of evil in the world. But before evil was, I am. The cub then touched the heart of the lioness, who felt herself dissolve through the rock of the cave, a nearly intolerable lightness suffusing her being. She felt herself dissolve into space, into a deep velvet peace that held her and called her by name. And the events that had shaped her life, the painful memories she had locked in her heart, were a tiny speck of glittering in that vast space. Finally, she knew. She was so much bigger than that frightened cub, so much greater than that time-bound lioness. Evil did not define her. She was free. The lioness returned from her journey. She awakened in her cage, but it no longer held her. She had grown bigger than her prison. Her friend, the Diamond One, was waiting in her usual place beside the cell. For a long time, neither spoke. Finally, the lioness said, "I have found my path, Diamond One. It is the path of compassion." She paused a moment, then added, "My vision showed me that a cub will lead me upon it." A warm and comfortable silence rose up to surround the two great cats, as each saw in the eyes of the other two fiery suns spinning around the black centers of infinite peace. "My vision revealed something else." The lioness settled firmly upon her powerful haunches. She took a deep breath, and as her great chest expanded, a slight breeze caressed the downy white and yellow hairs upon her breast. "I have found my teacher," she said to her friend. "It is my own heart." Together they gazed out over the compound. The lioness held all present within her gaze, the cats and the keepers, and beyond, the strangers in whose world her cubs were embarked upon their own life's journey. She held the lion, pacing in captivity just a short distance away. She held all the pain and all the sorrow of her life and the lives of those she had touched. None was bigger than her own heart. Out of the expansiveness of her heart, the roar gathered. It sprang from a place of innocent truth inside her. "I am," she roared her name into the world. "I am," she roared the name from which she came. "I am," she roared the name to which she would return. Before evil was, I am. And that concludes our story.
Why have we come to Earth? Do you remember? Why have we taken Earth? Why have we come?
Hello, welcome back. The Lioness Tale, Awakening the Liberating Spirit. And that concludes our story. We want to thank Teresa Hahn very much for being the voice of Lioness for our show. And I just have a few comments to make on that last segment of the book. In the Hebrew scriptures, when Moses confronted the burning bush, you might remember that story, and he experienced God's call to lead the people, his people, out of exile, out of slavery, he asked God what name to use when he speaks on God's behalf to his people. And the answer he receives is, "Say, I am who I am. Tell them, I am sent me."
This is my name for all time. By this name I shall be invoked by all generations to come. I am. This I am is eternally present, or maybe a better way of saying that is it is eternal presence. It is the ground of being. It is the fundamental experience of our divine nature, which resides as a dimension that is not defined by time or limited by the reality of suffering and evil, which we are bound to experience as beings in time. The lioness unites with this divine presence. She experiences union with God, with the divine I am. In that moment, she experiences freedom. As the story says, evil did not define her. She was free. And she experiences this freedom in reclaiming her voice, her unique word in the world. And this harkens back to the prologue of John's Gospel with which we started the story. If you remember, in the beginning was the Word, and the Word was with God, and the Word was God. I am. When Lioness rediscovers her voice, it moves through her entire being. Let me just read that little piece to you again. It starts way down in her deepest core. It coursed through her backbone. It spread hot into her pelvis. It retched in her belly at the memory of her mother's death. And yet it continued slicing up through her heart, cutting away the proud flesh, up through her throat, the sound of dogs yapping at her ears. And still it rose, like a serpentine fire, cleaving her skull at the place between her eyes, splitting the darkness with its searing sound, rising out of her flesh, out of the silence of her life, to wake her sleeping dead. Finally, her roar exploded into the world. The roar of lioness woke the keepers from their sleep. It woke cats all across the compound, down the steep cliff walls, into the valley of the male cats it reached, and beyond. The coyotes ceased their howling to listen, and the wind carried it even to the dwellings of strangers that littered the desert floor many miles distant from the preserve. It gave a haunting rattle to their windows and a shiver to their hearts. It was a voice unlike any that had been heard before. As her voice comes alive into the world, it helps awaken others. Keepers, kept, strangers, her cubs, her lion partner. When any one of us awakens to the I am at the core of our lives, we make it that much easier for others to awaken and experience their own freedom. I'm reminded of a Christian scripture that says, for freedom Christ has set us free. Do not submit again, therefore, to a yoke of slavery. And what is the slavery that the lioness has been set free from? It's a slavery of being defined by circumstances, defined by childhood wounds and the hurtful, sometimes downright evil, actions of others, as well as our own evil acts. It's the slavery of ignorance and not knowing who we are at the deepest and most fundamental ground of our being, one in union with God, with the great I am. One with that in which we live and move and have our being. The journey of lioness is the journey of all of us. We all come into the world innocent. We all come into the world fresh from the great mystery, fully present. But we all experience a fall from grace, so to speak, don't we? We are all exiled from the garden, from paradise. And so begins our wandering in exile and our search for a way back to the promised land, back home. I think one of the key insights is on the lips of the panther. She says, "It is a lonely journey," she tells the silent one. "The temptation is great to become someone other than ourselves, and many there are that take that path. The path is narrow that leads to home, but it is not lonely forever, only for a little while. It can make all the difference to have a friend who can tell you that." With this sage advice, the panther concludes the story of her own dark night of the soul. The term dark night of the soul comes from the Spanish mystic St. John of the Cross, who says, "To come to the knowledge you have not, you must go by a way in which you know not." And that is what the panther did. In remaining true to her own instincts and inner guidance, she had to let go of the truths of others. She had to enter into the darkness. Quoting from page 54, she says, "I remained in a darkness that invaded all of my senses. It permeated my thinking, my imagining, and my feeling. I reached out with all my faculties to grasp the knowing within that held to the integrity of my choice. It eluded me. Days passed, and I fell deeper and deeper into a darkness of soul. I fell not into what was known, but into what knew me. Not into anything I could grasp, but into something that grasped me, that held me in benediction, that would never let me go." In other words, she surrendered. She surrendered into the I Am. This is the surrender asked for in the 12-step programs of AA and NA. It is the surrender into a power greater than ourselves. The narrow path is not the path of rules and laws set forth by external authorities. It is not the path of orthodoxy that some religious authorities would have you believe. The narrow path is uniquely yours. It belongs to no one else. It is the path back through the fear and anger and sadness that surround the wounding to your soft and vulnerable heart. It is lonely because only you can do the work, but it is not lonely forever, because right under the fear and the anger and the sadness is the I Am that has never left. In this present moment is union with God, is union with yourself and with every being. Another way of saying this is that the resurrection is here and now, but we need to turn toward the cross, toward our wounds, not away. The way out is through. And when we pass through the eye of this needle, we find ourselves as a friend, a companion, a mirror for others on the way. The lioness becomes a panther. So I could say more. We'll have more to say on other shows, but I want to remind you that next week we'll be welcoming Christine Stewart Price, who's an internationally recognized teacher of Gestalt Awareness Practice, to our show. I'd like to also direct you to KennethEHartman.com. We spoke with Ken last week to an article he wrote called Seeking Peace that really speaks to our show today. And please go to our website, thelionestail.com, and order the book and download the show and gather some friends for a great discussion group. So again, thelionestail.com and KennethEHartman.com for his beautiful article, Seeking Peace. Thanks for listening. See you next week.
Author of The Lioness Tale, minister and Enneagram teacher Diane Pendola is the director and co-founder of Skyline Harvest, an eco-contemplative center in the Sierra foothills of Northern California. Living on 200 private acres with wooded trails and spectacular views, she offers Lioness Tail workshops, Enneagram consultations, and retreat opportunities. Diane created and conducts an in-prison transformational program called the Lioness Tail Prison Project. At Skyline Harvest, as well as inside prison walls, she advances the theme of her Voice America radio show, The Lioness Tail, Awakening the Liberating Spirit. If you are interested in sponsoring this life-changing program for people inside prison, or if you wish to purchase Diane's book, schedule a consultation, retreat, or workshop at Skyline Harvest, contact Diane at www.ecocontemplative.org or call 530-288-0308. Again, that's ecocontemplative.org or call 530-288-0308.